Welcome to this week's edition of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. And I got to tell you, it's nice to be back after a couple of weeks off due to Prairie Fire Nevada's Beyond the Berm and SHOT Show. It's nice to be back in the seat once again. Now, this week's guest is an Area 8 shooter with a J. Beal basement. But we'll get into that when we're talking. We happen to run into each other at the Carolina Classic, and we have been since then, since last summer, we have tried multiple times to get this to work. Sometimes it was on the guest end, sometimes it was on my end, but either way, here we are. And with that, join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Noel Zarza. How you doing, Noel?
Good, Dave. Good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. So we're going to have to get to that basement at some point.
Yeah, so there's a – I would just say that, you know, Christmas, you know how you have all the boxes that come out and I got to pack all the stuff back in. So, yeah, it's not much of a dry fire dojo at the moment, but it will be one soon.
Okay. I once had a person come over to my house because I still had my Christmas tree up. And they're like, at this point, you might as well decorate it for 4th of July. So it's all good.
Yes. Talking about Christmas tree. So we always leave one up. And there it is right there.
There you go.
The bedroom Christmas like it. Tree. So yeah. Yeah, we have something that's Christmassy in here. I mean, you kind of have to with a name like mine.
Okay, yeah. Anybody ever call you Noel?
All the time. And you know, funny story. Well, if you shot a match with me, right? You know how they say your name and you're in the hole, right? And so-and-so is on deck and the shooter is, right? So Rob Epifani, my good buddy of mine, he would always crack a joke when they say I'm in the hole, right? So the person saying it would say Noel or Noel in the hole, and then Rob would say Noel in the hole, and then I'm supposed to say that's what she said. So it's just so if you ever squad with us, then you know where that came from.
And then I know what to expect. If I don't hear it, I'll be disappointed. Yeah.
Well, it really depends on if they're doing it like me. When I'm the timer, I would just say three people's names because they get it, and that's a little more, I don't know, efficient.
So, right.
Anyway, yeah.
All right. So Noel, what I normally do is throw the hard questions right up front on you. Okay.
Oh yeah.
So we're gonna hit you with the icebreakers, and number one, favorite movie.
Okay, so easy, but let me tell you something, my background in movies. So growing up as a kid, my dad would tell me that, hey, if you're watching something dumb, then why are you watching it? So what it boiled down to, the show movie had to have social redeeming value. It had to mean something. It would have to make me better after watching it, right? But I also like to be entertained when I watch my movies, just like watching football. So from an entertainment value perspective, it's got to be the Top Guns, both of them, bar none.
Oh, just okay.
Yeah, because like you could talk about that later on down the road. I did want to be a naval aviator one point in time when I was small, when I wore glasses. But then I wore glasses, so I couldn't go that route. But in terms of social redeeming value, I would have to say it's definitely Schindler's List.
Oh, that is a good one. That's a heavy movie.
Super heavy. Yep.
But very good. I want to say I saw that in the theater. Yeah, I want to say I saw that in the theater. Good.
Yeah, it was hard to watch whether you're at home or in the theater. It was pretty rough. But yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's unadulterated history right there and of the most evil kind. So
definitely.
All right, so we can't go to any other questions though. We got to revisit Top Gun. Hold on a second.
Please do.
So I was in the military when the original Top Gun came out, so I didn't see it in the theater. But I saw it shortly thereafter because I was overseas. So when it came out, Now, I want to get your thoughts on, though, because I think it's a great, it's a classic movie, obviously, the original. What are your thoughts? If number two is one of the best ones you've seen, give me your thoughts when you saw number two.
I loved it even just as much, if not slightly more, because it was a younger crowd. I kind of knew more about flying in jets after the fact, right? So you were overseas. Where overseas were you?
By chance. Okinawa.
Okay, great. So you weren't too far away. I was in Subic Bay at the same time. And so I actually was able to watch it. Yeah, sure. I wasn't endless. I was a kid still. I was with my dad.
All right, hold on. We got to call timeout. Okay. What time frame were you in Subic Bay?
85 to 89.
I was there three times from 85 to 87.
Yeah, we probably walked right past each other. Probably NEX maybe, or Spanish Gate, or any other places. Probably did. Good chance. I mean, so I was I went to George Dewey High, so it's a you know the DoD school that's there, and great memories, great place. I got a lot of friends I still keep in touch with that went to school there with me. Unfortunately, you know, Pinatubo happened and all that stuff got shut down. But matter of fact, my parents are there right now visiting. They're on vacation. They're hanging out. They toured the whole country pretty much everywhere. And now they're about to come back in a couple of days. They were there for like 2 months. So 85, 89. If you were there, you remember the library was next to the movie theater at Subic. I don't know if you ever watched a movie at Subic.
I did not, but yes. And then
across the street was the ferry that took you over to Grandy Island. If you ever did Grandy Island while you were there for vacation, nice place, nice little island. But so I was watching it in Subic, and jarheads and squids were all all over the place, and it was packed. I mean, the theater was packed, and you know, in a DoD theater, you stand up and when the national anthem plays, because that's what they do.
Yep.
And I tell you what, it was quite the epic moment. Like, I want to do that. And that was I was maybe eighth or ninth grade at the time. Seventh, eighth, ninth grade. I was, junior high.
Okay.
And yeah. So fast forward, you're talking about Top Gun 2. I actually had a nice stint because, as you know, I'm retired Army. But I was blessed to have a role with the Air Force back during 9/11. So it was during my tour. In 2000, 2001. And I was their 8th Fighter Wing in Kunsan, Korea. So you have Osan, and south of Osan, you have Kunsan. And there's two F-16 squadrons that are down there. And I had a nice, super nice job where I was the Army guy that was the liaison officer for the Air Force Fighter Wing. And believe it or not, one of my task was to jump in the backseat of F-16D model, so the two-seater model, and fly and do sorties over Korea. So yeah, I was one of the rare opportunities and probably one of the few Army officers that had the opportunity to do that. It was good times. Learned a lot. Was very humbled by how awesome it is to be a pilot. They are in shape, let me tell you. Those guys are something, and the gals, because there's several female pilots too that are just amazing people. Amazing organization. Air Force, I was like, I asked myself, why did I join the Army? These are Air Force guys haven't made. I mean, you know, when they're looking at you, hey, here's your dorm. And I'm like, what about barracks? No, we call them dorms. What are you talking about, barracks? Yeah. And it's no joke. When you're talking about you done with your sortie and you want to go to the O Club for beer and pizza or steak or whatever, yeah, they do that. That's a thing. That's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, the Air Force treats their people right. No doubt.
Very well.
Yeah.
Very well.
But they're also, if you think about it, Noel, though, they're also backwards of all the other military. Because if you look at the Army, if you look at the Marines, you look at the Navy, the vast majority that actually fight are the enlisted.
That's right.
In the Air Force, the vast majority who do the combat are the officers.
That's true. That's true. I'm looking forward to that Masters of the Air series are coming out too. I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah. So the same producers that did Banner Brothers and the Pacific, They've now doing the Air Force side of things, or the Army Air Corps for World War II. So.
Oh, okay. That will be good.
Yeah, it's going to be. It's going to be very good.
Oh, okay. Thanks for the heads up. Now I know. Keep an eye out for it.
Masters, for sure. I think I want to say it's Netflix, but I could be wrong.
Okay. I mean, it's all good. I'm going to write it down. All right. I have found doing this podcast, people don't read anymore. But you were in the military, so you went on deployment, and you were also in at the time when there was no such thing as Kindle and things of the such. So what's your favorite book?
Bible.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We've had that a couple of times. Good answer.
Yeah. And if you're talking on, remember the movie thing I had, Social Redeeming Value. Well, on an entertainment perspective, it'd be pretty much anything that's apocalyptical. That's a hard word to say. So like Terminator series kind of stuff.
Book of Eli.
Like there's this one that I'm reading now called Catalyst. It's pretty good. So yeah, I dig it. There's a piece of sci-fi that's in that genre that I don't know, something that digs to your soul, like, you know, the next thing to be ready for kind of thing, right? So anyway.
So you go with down your answer, you want to, but... So with your answer being the Bible, I assume you've watched The Chosen?
We got into it, never finished it. No.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Your post-apocalyptic stuff. I don't know if you're into superheroes. If you are, who is your favorite superhero? If not, who's your favorite historical figure?
He's not even historical yet. I guess depending on how you put it. That's the easy one. He's a superhero as far as I'm concerned. Brock Purdy. Brock freaking Purdy. Ever heard of him?
Nope, never heard of him. That's a lie. I was going to ask you, how are you a 49er fan?
Yeah, so growing up, I grew up in the Bay Area. So my dad was actually in the Army too, and I was born at Fort Ord, which is now a college of some sort. So I had a choice, right? So I went to high school in Vallejo, California. And that choice, well, are you going to be a Raider fan or a Niner fan, right? Because that's, if you go and you look at a family photo of mine any Christmas year, there'll be half Raiders fans and the other half will be Niners fans. It's hilarious. And we got a huge family. Anyway, both sides. Anyway, so I ended up being a Niner fan. And the funny thing is I actually met Jim Plunkett. Remember Jim Plunkett from the
Raiders? Yep, quarterback of the Oakland Raiders. Beat the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Right. So,
yeah,
both his parents are blind. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Oh, that's weird.
I have no idea where. Oh, that's hysterical.
I unlocked some secret on your
Well, I downloaded the widgets for that, but I didn't know that. Hold on a second. Does that? Nope. Only you have the magic, Noel.
I'll have to figure how it.
Yeah, I don't know what you did there, but that was hysterical.
So Jim came to my kindergarten class and talked to us, Mr. Plunkett, and told us this whole story. Right, I remember this vivid night. I said, "Oh man, he's such a great guy. I wanted him to be my team." And then this team moves from, you know, Oakland to LA or whatever. It's like I can't be a fan of a team that just moves constantly, right? So, and plus, you know, you're talking about Jerry Rice, Joe Montana, you know, Roger Craig, all those guys. And it was kind of given I'd become a Niner fan. So that's how.
Okay. Well, I mean, Oakland was just on the other side of the bay. So I get where you could easily split, you know, which team you're going to root for. But yeah, I didn't like when they moved away from LA. I liked it when they moved back. I don't like that they moved to Vegas, but. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Vegas, that's so funny.
I mean, they're like the Cardinals, you know?
That's true. And the Rams.
Yeah. So moving around, not a fan of it. Oh, well. And San Diego is no longer San Diego. They're now the Los Angeles Chargers.
Were you ever stationed in the West Coast, or were you mainly East Coast?
I was East Coast and Okinawa, but my dad was a Marine when I was a kid. So we lived in Pendleton, so right outside of L.A.
Oh, very nice. Okay, good.
Back then it was nice before all the politics got involved.
It's, I mean, the base itself is still nice. I mean, so. My dad worked over at Mare Island, right, in Northern California, or the Bay Area. See, we called Northern California, most people call the Bay Area Northern California, even though it's like in the center of California for some reason, right?
Right.
You know, I'm sure you know that. So when that base closed, my dad got a job at Miramar and retired from there. So they still live down there, and my brother does too. So we still call, you know, Southern California home. And when we do go back, we always hit the beach in Camp Pendleton, because the beach at Camp Pendleton is fantastic. It's probably the secret of California, basically, is that beach is pretty cool.
Yeah, we had I can still remember, I was halfway through my third grade year, and it was the bicentennial, 1976.
Oh, very nice.
We moved to Virginia from Pendleton, and our base housing at Pendleton was like the perfect house to be in, because it was at the end of a street and it literally faced due west. So nothing was impeding our view, and we had a wide open view of the bay. So you could see the tankers, everything else out on the horizon. It was just an amazing view. I'm not a fan of politics. Oh, it's giant. I was telling somebody the other day, I said, geographically, it is the most beautiful state in the country. It has everything. Deserts, lush woodlands, mountains, volcanoes, beaches, desert. You literally have everything there. So you cannot beat it. Because like, I've been to California as an active duty Marine twice. I went to Bridgeport, California for cold weather training. Absolutely loved it. I would have bought property and stayed there for the rest of my life. We were out doing stuff in 5 degree temperature. Woke up one morning and there was like 2 feet of snow on the ground and it was 5 degrees. I don't care. I'm a cold weather person. I'm not a hot weather person. And the other time was, I went to San Francisco as a scout sniper instructor, because we had people at the Naval base there that I was training. So I did a mobile training team from Quantico out to San Francisco for a week, trained those guys, and then came back. So
that's cool.
I was never stationed out there, but I visited.
Where was that at?
What's that?
That wasn't Presidio, right? So which is that?
No.
Was that Alameda?
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember exactly where it was now. And it was the Marines have a security force detachment there, and that's who I was training for the week. So I flew out there with some guns and some stuff, and it was just, if I remember correctly, it was just me. So
nice.
It was fun.
TDY.
It was a
TDY in
San Francisco. Oh yeah.
Before it just went downhill.
Yeah, exactly. But man, it was windy and chilly. It was winter time, so it was like in the 50s with 20 mile an hour winds. Those winds were crazy. I say 20, it was actually more than that. But all right. Favorite gun and caliber of all time. Now, they don't have to be married together. It could be an AR-15 is your favorite gun and a 22 is your favorite caliber, but.
Yeah, I'm going to be kind of biased, I think. It's kind of.
That is not allowed, sir. Yeah, all right.
That guy.
Well, that is pretty. Gerson?
Oh, yeah.
What? Okay.
So, yeah, this is my training gun because it's got the funny red grip, but.
So is this your Gerson limited optics gun?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. All right. Tell them what we're looking at.
So this is a Gerson 2311 What is 2311? But this would be the prototype version. So it does come on rail, right? So you could put a flashlight if you wanted to, but in this case, it has it's been remilled. So it's a competition model. So it was rewelded and remilled for Hollis on comp dot. And
now is that a direct mount?
Yeah.
Or do you have a slot? No, it's got a plate. An optic slide? Okay. An optic plate. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's a plate.
All right.
Yeah, there's a C and H plate is what's on there, a cross plate.
Okay. It's a
micro. Yeah, it's a good gun. So this was at the time was the cheapest one out there for made out of brass. And so you'll get to hear a theme where I try to go for the least cost effective item.
Me too.
the most efficient price.
So, who made that?
I make my own ammo. It's B and C components. It's I don't know if you can read that. And they come in brass. I got all the colors. They come in brass, black, and silver ish. Yeah, it's huge and it's nice and heavy. It's stout. So when they first came out, so it was who was selling it? Double Alpha County. I think they had a misprice because they're way cheaper than what a Magwell should be. They're like $80, $79. And then when I picked up another one, they finally got the price back up. But I got lucky. I got the first two underneath that $100 mark. So
nice.
But for brass, you know, it's a nice gun. I'm still waiting on another grip from where do I get my grips from? Masterpiece Arms.
Okay.
There's an 18-week lead line, and they're actually sticking it to that 18 weeks. So I won't see it till February. 18 weeks, man.
Ugh, okay.
Long time.
So 4.5 months. Yeah. Goodness.
Basically. Yeah. I probably ordered it when I saw you last. It's probably what I ordered.
All right. So caliber-wise, what's your favorite?
It's 9. It's easily 9. Nowadays. I mean, okay. I would have said 45 back when they didn't have the small pistol primer debacle. So I can't stand 45 now because I manually have to separate the brass, and that's a no-go for me now. So I try not. I mean, I have a lot loaded up, so if I wanted to go back to it, I could, but that's a nightmare. Like, it'd be great if they went back to just one pistol primer size in 45, but good luck. That's not happening.
So do you still load 45 or do you just load 9 now?
I just load 9 now. My press is only set up for 9 now. I could reset it at 45, but I loaded up all the bullets. I don't know if I did or not. I might have another box of whatever's in that box left. But yeah, no, just 9.
Okay.
Make my life easy. Because the limit optics is basically what I'm going to shoot this year. If there's a class firing match that happens, then I'll put my neck out for revolver. Just go one go at it and get classified in revolver. But aside from that, it's all limit optics. Rest of my time.
That's like right out of left field.
So yeah, it's out. So I'm classified in all the divisions in A card, not the fake A. Well. You know how you have an M card and then everything else gets boosted up to A?
Yeah.
But I do have an M card and PCC, but we don't talk about that. But all the other divisions are 75% or better, right? So except for revolver, I haven't classified yet. So that's what's one, I don't know, whatever. It's because of the USPSA website, right? Because they give you those little circle things that tell you what you're classified in.
Got to have all the circles.
Yeah, I got to make Instagram posts on that or something one of these days. I don't know.
Oh, goodness.
It's truly ballers, those guys that have the GM card and all that stuff. It's like, wow, how do you – that's a lot of time spent on every division to get the GM card and all that. That's amazing. I don't think there's a lot of folks that have that either, maybe one or two.
Yeah, probably not that many. All right, so the last question I like to personalize to the guest, and that is – tell me your favorite memory of being in the Army.
Oh, this is the personal question. All right. Yeah. Wow. Geez, that's a tough one. Because it wouldn't be in the Army if I said it was flying in a backseat F-16.
But you were in the Army when you did it, so.
Yeah, but that's not with the army, right? That would be unfair. There's so many. I don't know how to pick just one.
My best memory in the army was when the Air Force took care of me.
That's the easiest one to remember because, I mean, it goes back to that pilot mentality. You know, they treat you like a pilot, so
Yep.
you're in your own little world, right? I mean, you got your crew chief and you got your jet. You get to listen to the intel folks talk for a little while, and then you go to your thing.
Yeah.
Man, that's a tough one. I would have to. We might have to circle back on that because there's just so many. Like, well.
I feel like we just joined a White House briefing. We're going to circle back to
Yeah, so
that.
I would probably venture out and say it's probably the time. So I was deployed several times. One time was in Iraq. I was a MIT team chief, and as a MIT team guy, you're hanging out with Iraqis. So we're on an Iraqi base, and we literally had to grab all our gear, throw it in the back of a Humvee, and drive to where the range was, right, to go shoot. And the range was actually on the Iraqi facility side. So there's just imagine there's an American side over here, and then there's Iraqi, but we're joined with the fence that we come across. So we live on their base, but we have our own cantonment area, if you will. So we would go down there and shoot, and I would set up courses, and I had a three, was it three? Three or four man PSD that would be with me, and they would be attached to me, but with different units. So a MIT team is kind of like a wannabe soft unit that's wannabe trained in what do you call it? Foreign advising techniques and skills and all that kind of stuff. Fit. Well, I forget the correct acronym now. It's been a long time. So we're on the range, and the PSD and I would have these many I don't know, competitions. Set up, and this is before I knew really knew anything about USPSA, and we throw targets out there, and it was really all long gun stuff at first. And I just have competitions with the 82nd guys that were with me, or the 10th Mountain guys that were with me. We had just a good time, really really fun time. So yeah, any time on a range, I would say is probably when I had the best time. And then when I was my last tour in Afghanistan, on Sundays we would go out to the range, and it'd be fun trying to compete with the soft guys. It's cheesy sort of, but they're really good, and it's kind of hard to keep up with them at that point in time. My shooting, anyways, I'm pretty sure I can hold my own nowadays. Anyway,
Okay.
then that was in 2000, 2012. So anytime on a range, I guess there's a lot of other memories that come up, but I don't want to just spend all night talking about those.
All right. Well,
Because
yeah, they
this
get
is
a lot of
good.
trigger time, so when they're in, they definitely build their skills.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Yep. Yeah,
All
it's fun
right.
watching.
Now, your dad was in the army, so did you? It's different being in the army where you can't have any type of weapons on base for the most part, personal weapons anyway, unless you turn them into the armory or whatever. But I don't know if you growing up, your dad being in the army, if you guys left off base and did you grow up around weapons or shooting?
Not at all. I'm laughing because I told this story not too long ago.
Okay.
So no, but to retell that story, I would. So I wasn't the smartest kid growing up, and so I had relatives that, or a relative that had a BB gun underneath his bed, and my uncle, right? And I'd be visiting my grandma's house, and I would sneak it out, go to the backyard and shoot it. Right. And yeah, let's just say I did some really silly things. But that was only because, again, we were in California, and my folks are very non-Republican, which is kind of weird because I ended up being Republican. That's nor here nor there. But anyway, and so we were really non-gun. So we didn't have a real firearm in the house growing up. But at some point in my time, I guess my dad realized I was going to join the army. I was going to follow in his footsteps. And so he bought me this biathlon pellet gun. Once I want to say it was a 22, but it's probably a 177 caliber. And it was a break barrel, right? You had to break the barrel, put the one round in, close
Okay.
it back up, and you got one shot. You got these big sites kind of thing, like biathlon sites that took a little bit to used to, but you know, what it came down to was the basics, that trigger pulls. You know, when you do that, the gun doesn't move, right? And just aim at the smallest target that's out there. And I laughed because I had a neighbor and it was quiet, but he could still hear the thing hit, right? And I'm surprised he never called the cops on me. But anyways, I got pretty good with that particular device and training tool, I would call it. And it made me fairly well, or it got me to the point where when I transitioned and finally went to the Army and I was shooting, real rifles, it wasn't the same. Obviously the same thing applies, that you don't move the gun when you press the trigger kind of thing.
Yes.
And it's a lot absolutely. Easier obviously with a rifle. So, shooting rifles now, it's fun, but it's kind of cheating, honestly, because, you know, it's a lot easier to shoot a rifle than it is a pistol. That's why I prefer.
I think it depends on the context of what you mean, because I've done a lot of long range stuff, and then you get a lot of external factors that can make it much more difficult to be precise when hitting a target.
If you're talking
300 yards and in, I would agree it's easier.
Yeah. That's all I'm talking about. 300 yards and in.
Okay. And yeah, that's pretty simple. I mean, because you have minimal external environmental conditions that affect the trajectory and the flight of the bullet. So yeah, it's much easier. I would agree.
Oh yeah. Well, I applaud anyone who's a sniper, because I had one of our trainers, or one of our sergeant NCOs in one of my units was a sniper. Actually, a couple of them were. And before any of our guys went to sniper school, we would have a little mini course, if you will. He would kind of indoctrinate them and have them understand what they're going to have to go through and be ready for and all that stuff. And, you know, I'd listen to, I forget what it's called. It was something games where you have to look at a piece of paper or objects on the table and you have to memorize them really quick. And then you only have like 15 or Kim's games. That's it. He would do that to us. And I'm like, oh yeah, it was a good little drill.
I did that to paramedic students.
Good stuff. It's really good stuff. Keeps you on your toes.
It does. But the thing that I was relating to them was, you get on the scene of a trauma victim and you're very focused on your patient. You've got to move them. You've got to get them out of there. You've got to do stuff. But you also have to note the position they're in, what the situation was. You know, if they fell off something, how high was it? So if I could get them into seeing stuff for a brief amount of time and remembering it, when they get to the hospital or the helicopter, wherever they're taking their patient, then they can relay more information to help paint the picture of what happened and what injuries this person might have. So I'm the only guy that I'm aware of that has ever done that, at least in our system anyway, but.
No, it definitely applies. I mean, especially if it's like a vehicle accident. And
yeah, absolutely.
And
were they wearing a seatbelt? Were they not? How deep was the intrusion? Where was the vehicle impacted? There's so many different things that one quick, 30 second look should be able to answer all of those questions.
Right. Definitely. That's good stuff.
Now, you said earlier that initially you wanted to be a fighter pilot, but you wore glasses, so you were disqualified. At what point did you decide, instead I'm going to join the Army?
Okay, so this is a great story. I actually, out of high school, I did it again. There you go.
For the people just listening to the podcast, twice he's activated some balloon widget and he's got balloons going up his screen. They're virtual, but it's hilarious every time we see it. Oh, go ahead, Noel.
That's so awesome. So, coming from a military family. My dad was enlisted. My grandfather was enlisted, and my great grandfather, believe it or not, was enlisted too. So everyone in my family was enlisted. So I was actually looking at joining the Marine Corps, believe it or not. And so I had two tracks I was looking at. One was Marine Corps, and the other one was getting accepted to what's called a military junior college. So there's only four in the country. One being here in PA, matter of fact, Valley Forge. And you got New Mexico Military Institute, where I went. Then you have Georgia Military Academy, and then you have Wentworth Military Academy. And so the day the recruiter was in our house, right, is with the Swearmian, this is the Marine Corps recruiter, right? That day, my parents were around, and then you got to imagine we're at the dining table. We're about to make this legit, right? And here comes the mailman coming driving his little Jeep, and my mom, you know, she didn't want me to be enlisted, so because her dad was enlisted, and they had some drama. But anyway. So mailman's here. He says, "Stop! No, we're not doing this." And I'm like, "The recruiter's right here." So what happened was I applied a couple of colleges before the recruiter showed up, and I made the silly mistake of not waiting for those letters to come and say, "No, you're not going, or you're not accepted." Mm. Right. So she runs out. She gets the mail. Say, "You got one. This one was from Wentworth," and I was accepted. So I'm like, don't know. Should I be enlisted or should I try to be an officer? It was kind of not really hard decision. Yeah. And I got the second letter maybe a week or two later for New Mexico. And because it was closer to California, that's where I decided to go. And, you know, it's kind of.
Okay. Well, hold on though. What we skipped right over how you told the Marine recruiter no, and he had to leave.
Yeah. That was kind of rough. Yeah. My parents were there, so they covered.
I'm sure your mom had no issue saying get out.
I kind of blocked that from my memory. I don't remember how it went down honestly anymore, but yeah, I just remembered it. I did not miss that day. And to be honest, all things being equal, I think I made the right decision. So
100%.
And the 100%. Reason why is that it kind of launched my knowledge of what it takes to actually go to, like, so the military junior college program is accelerated. It's a little different, and I could go into that, but really I have four kids, so two are boys. And from that experience, for me at least, allowed me to understand, okay, this is how this is. If my boys want to go through ROTC as well, they could do a different track. And so I studied, I learned it all. So, long story short, my oldest boy is at Shippensburg University now with a 3-year scholarship.
Purple Haze, Jimi Hendrix.
That's good stuff. And my younger boy just earned a 4-year scholarship, ROTC scholarship. So he doesn't.
Nice.
He's probably going to go to VMI. But he's also applied to Annapolis and West Point. So we'll see if he gets accepted to any of those.
VMI is just right down the road.
Is it really? Yes.
Yeah, so hours, but
back in November.
Not that far away. Yeah, it's nice.
Okay. It is amazing. I wish I went there, honestly. I mean, so my school is modeled, my New Mexico Military Institute is actually modeled off of VMI. A lot of the stuff that we did at what we call NMI. Was pretty much stolen from VMI. Well, I'd say still borrowed from VMI.
Okay.
But there's so much history in VMI. I mean, so I was walking through VMI. Did you know Chesty Puller went there?
You know, I did not know that Chesty Puller went to VMI. Nope.
Yeah, he went there. So he was going there, and then he quit because the war was going on. He said he wanted to join the war and jump on board. So that's what he did.
Which war? World War One?
One of the wars. It would have to be one, I would imagine, right? Because he was kind of old during two, wasn't he?
Yeah, I want to say he was already in World War Two. He's already like a major or something like that.
Yeah.
The captain. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, it's probably World War One. Who else?
I have a picture of it. I'll have to share it to you. I'll have to send it to you because I do have the picture of the plaque of the year on it. I just honestly don't remember anymore what it said.
Okay.
But yeah. It's pretty cool. So he went there. Patton went there for a year. I don't know if you knew that. George now, C. Marshall Patton, went there.
Patton is my favorite Army general.
Good dude. A very smart person.
But my favorite general of all time, and this is probably, this is definitely not politically correct, but the great Stonewall Jackson taught there.
That's my great favorite general of all time. So, yeah.
By far, that guy is amazing.
Yep.
So,
yeah, definitely. I was surprised. You know, you see these photos of these Civil War generals, and you look at them, you think they're like super old, right? You know how old Stonewall was before he died?
I want to say, hold on a second. He was late 30s to 40 years old.
Yep. You're right. 39.
There you go. Yeah. Cause he was early 20s when they fought Mexico. So,
right.
And it was about 15 years roughly later. So,
He's got a good story. I mean, we could talk ad nauseum about Jackson for sure.
We may end up having to do just a military episode, military history.
So,
I'd be down for that. I love it.
Definitely.
All right. Yep. So I do want to say that I am curious though. You said that a military junior college is accelerated. So
the ROTC program is, to be specific. Yeah.
Okay. So are you still doing 4 years? Are you doing three and a half? I mean, what do you mean by accelerated?
So it's 2 years. It's a 2 year college. So you go and then correct. And then, after your sophomore year, you graduate. So you get an associate's degree from a military junior college and you graduate and you get a, you get commissioned as a second lieutenant. You'd only be eligible for the National Guard because it's the active army. It requires you to have a 4 year degree to be commissioned.
Okay.
Right. So how they do that, you have your MS, like in regular ROTC program, you have an MS1 through MS4 year. So your MS1 year you take as a freshman, and MS2 year you take as a sophomore. At a military junior college, your MS1 year and MS2 year, you get credit for that at basic. So you get to go to Fort Knox, Kentucky for basic, what we call basic camp. I don't know how long it is nowadays. It might have been 6 weeks when I went. I don't remember, honestly, but you go there and you just get indoctrinated in the Army. You understand land nav and BRM, and you know you can go do the bayonet assault course, which is probably my funnest time at basic camp. Was that? That was great.
Well, there's your favorite memory. There we go.
Oh well, it's because I stuck to the head, right? Motion, you strike,
and then slash them.
Yeah, and you slide, but the butt stuck to the head, the last target that I was running through the course, the head fell right off. The drill sergeant was freaked out. He's like, "How'd you do that?" It was great. It was very memorable. I wish I had that on video.
Nice.
Yeah. So your MS1, MS2 year, you gets taken care of at Fort Knox, and then your MS3 year is your freshman year in college, and then you go. It's called advanced camp. So normally, in a regular ROTC program, you don't go to advanced camp until your junior, between your junior or senior year. So you're already competing. So you're as a between freshmen, so you're 18 years old and you're competing for what you would call a 4 or 5, because they grade all the cadets at advanced camp to be like the top cadet, right? And you know these guys have been doing it for 3 years. We've only really been doing it for a year and right, a couple months. So yeah, it's accelerated to that extent. You got to be on your game. And then what I learned in regular ROTC, they do FTXs only twice a year. They do it in the spring and another one in the fall, or one in the fall and another one in the spring. That's it. And a military junior, at least the one I went to, a military junior college, we did an FTX every month. And it was pretty grueling. I'd come back, like the washout rate was pretty high, right? I mean, let's say, like for my year group, we had 350 that went to basic camp, and probably maybe 110 of them actually made it to the school. So about a third made it.
Wow.
After basic camp. So the washout was pretty high. And then we only commissioned about 40 of us from that 310. So yeah.
Wow.
Like I was saying, there. I remember there's one November where we were coming back from FTX, and my back was just thrashed. I mean, it was destroyed. It was because we were walking all day, and our rucksacks were stupid heavy. And I was a scrawny dude back then. I wasn't as hefty as I am now. But I'd come back, and I couldn't sleep on my rack because my back. I couldn't even get in my bunk because my back was so messed up. And like I wanted to ring that bell. You know what I mean? I didn't because everyone else was sucking it up. So let's keep going. But yeah, it was good. It was a good time because you're, you know, and also in ROTC at a military junior college, you're part of a corps of cadets, right? And so some schools have them, but a lot of ROTC units don't. Like, so obviously VMI has a corps of cadets, Citadel has a corps of cadets, Texas A&M has one. I think even Virginia, one of the Virginia
Tech.
Colleges,
Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech has corps cadets.
Yep.
And so that whole thing is, you know, that's, in my opinion, if you're going to go through ROTC, you should have that. But for instance, my son is going to Shippensburg. There's no corps of cadets there. That's just ROTC battalion. But that's okay. I mean, Shippensburg still produces some pretty good officers. Definitely.
So where did you go to get the other 2 years of school then?
So I went to two colleges. One, I went to San Marcos State, my first one I went to is Hayward State. So up, you know, near San Francisco area. Hayward State's now called Cal State East Bay. So they changed the name at some point in time. And the reason being is I was going to move back home with my family and just commute. But because they moved down south, my folks moved down south, I ended up staying with my aunt and my grandmother. I lived there. And then eventually I transferred down to San Marcos State, which is Cal State San Marcos, which is near Oceanside, which is near Camp Pendleton. And I commuted to that one. And that's actually where I met my wife. So, I graduated there in 97. Then we went active duty shortly thereafter. Yeah.
Now, how hard was it? I know we haven't even gotten into shooting yet, but that's okay. How that's hard right. was it? So you went through the, were you in the guard then after your 2 years?
Correct. Yep. Okay. Yep. So, and when I was at Harris State, I was actually a military police officer. Actually, when I was in New Mexico, when I was still a cadet, I was in the guard already, and I was with the air defense unit. So I went from air defense artillery to military police up in Hayward, or actually it was Richmond, California. And, which interesting enough, that unit actually had several war stories, but it's the wrong kind because it was during the Rodney King riots. They got activated and they had to do some stuff that's probably not nice to talk about. And then I moved south, went to join an armor unit in Escondido, and I stayed in armor after joining that unit. So I still had the option after graduating to transfer into another branch if I wanted to. But the California National Guard there down south took really good care of me. They sent me to three schools before I went active duty. I was able to go to basic under their dime too. The federal government didn't pay anything. California did. So that's kind of neat. I kind of owe California something now, I guess. But they sent me to infantry mortars leaders course. I learned how to shoot mortars and carry mortars, which is not fun to carry. But still cool to shoot. Still cool to shoot.
Yeah.
And
did you have to carry the base plate?
No, I carried the 81 tube. I got away from the base tube. Okay. So the 81 tube though, that's no joke. That tires you out easily after a mile or so. So yeah, it's no fun. And then they also sent me the scout platoon leaders course. So I got to do some scout stuff and Humvees and M3s and stuff like that. So it was good times.
Okay. Now, where did you retire at?
Also out of California, actually. So my last duty station was Fort Irwin. So,
okay. Isn't that a tank base?
It's what's called the National Training Center. So it's the Army's version of 29 Palms.
Right. So for some reason, I always think it's armor.
It is. It's Armored Cavalry Regiment. So 11th ACRs is the what do you call the world class op four. So whenever a unit rotational unit trains over there, they get a fight against us. And so yeah, we kind of put the kibosh on their plans for fame and glory and all that. They get humbled pretty quick. Yeah, it's easy. I mean, once you know the tactics of your weapon system and you know the terrain, if that's your backyard, if you lose, like, so when I was there, if you lose your job, right? You don't command anymore, right? At least that's how it was before they went away from HIC or high intensity conflict rotation. So when I was there, they were coming back to it, but they were still doing the whole what do you call it? Rotations that had man, drawing a blank here with the names of civilians on the battlefield and terrorist cells and all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't high intensity, it was multi something, I forget. Yeah, but when I was in 1/4 infantry, that was in Germany, when I commanded two companies there. There, if you lost the mission, if you lost a fight, you get fired. It was a little well, again, you're not supposed to lose. You're trained with the best. You are definitely
That's the old
you definitely know your weapon system.
zero defect mentality.
It kind of is, but the odds are stacked
In your favor.
in your favor to an extent. I mean, so yes and no. It's just that your guys are just that freaking good, really. They know where all the keyhole shots, at least at Hohenfels. We knew where all the keyhole shots were through the forest because it was Germany. So you had a lot of trees, a lot of roads that we knew that the rotational unit didn't know how to get through. And yeah, we would mop them up pretty quick. The idea is if you won the battle without having to deploy the reserve, right, then you smacked them pretty good. So I'm still trying to think. Full spectrum warfare, that's what it was called. Sorry.
All right.
Yeah, so you had, but yeah, with high intensity conflict, it's just tank on tank. So you got all what we call BIMPs. Our 113s were BMPs, and then our M68-3s were T-72s.
Okay, that's pretty close.
You're just using laser beams. So if you understand the science of lasers and how they work, then you use that advantage. And the RT, the rotational unit, didn't know what it meant to use that weapon system correct or that training system correctly, and so that's why they would lose. I could go into details, but it's nor here nor there. I wouldn't want to hear it. I wouldn't want any of our RTU listening to this podcast to know the secrets of the op four.
In closing, you never lost your job, right?
No.
Okay. All right. That's all that matters. You did
Yeah.
what you were supposed to do.
I had no, it's funny, is I got to fight my old XO, my old battalion XO. It was my one company, which I was, see, what was my slant? I think I had like a 4 and 20 versus two battalions. So I might have been an 8 and 20 versus two battalions. So it would be 8 tanks, 20 BMPs against two battalions of a mixed bag of M1s and Bradleys. And yeah, we smoked them. It was good times. It
Oh
was good
my
times.
gosh, I couldn't imagine losing to a bunch of BMPs. I might commit suicide.
Oh, well, it's just, well, I mean, it's again, it's the laser system. And my guys are good. And it wasn't really, so there's a rule, right? The rule is don't use your bullet if you don't have to. So, the Russians, so we simulated that we were the Russians. And if you know anything about their artillery systems, they're pretty stout. And so we would call for fire, and that's how we would knock out a lot of their stuff before we had to, go for something. And we actually had to use our own laser beams. So yeah, you fight them. And the secret to all is
Prep the
it's no
battlefield.
secret.
Yeah.
With artillery, definitely.
Yeah.
But
Absolutely.
the way you win in these battles is I'm not so sure I should share this on this podcast. to the world.
You don't have to. We can wait till later and you can tell me the secrets when we're not recording.
Okay.
All right. So you retire on the West Coast, but now you live on the East Coast.
Correct.
So, so two parts. One, how did you get here? And did you find practical shooting before you got here?
Okay. Great question. I found practical shooting in Iraq in 2010.
Okay. So
I was in I was in a MIT team, and another a captain on the other MIT team, on the division MIT team, showed up, and we were at the range shooting a lot with my PSD. He says, "You guys shoot a lot here. You need to take a look at these magazines." So he threw down four front sight magazines at me, and I'm like, "What's this?" And at first, I'm like, "There's no way that people do this, right?" Because I've never seen it. I mean, internet. I mean, again, what year was this? 2010. Internet's not that. I'm in Iraq. Okay, so it's slow. It's not fast. And then YouTube is still on the fringe. I don't even know if YouTube was that big of a thing. I'm sure it was, but I do remember a Travis Tomasi video because that guy could reload, right? So I opened this magazine up and I'm reading, going through. It's like, wow, I've read every one of those. And so long story short, by the end of that tour, I had a whole bunch of stuff waiting at my parents' place. Like I had a Dillon press. It was nuts. Their garage is half full.
Were you married at this time?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And your wife was aware you were buying all this stuff and shipping it to your parents' house?
Yeah. I don't remember exactly.
Okay. Your secret's safe with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's reloading.
You're stuttering a lot, Noel.
Yeah. You gotta learn how to reload ammo. Because it's cheaper that way. I can justify it, man.
Here's the white box of ammo,
and this is $14. Here's the one I made, and it's $7, or whatever it was back then.
Oh, that was funny. Okay. All right. So you had all this stuff waiting at your parents' house.
Yeah, I did. And so that was 2010, and so I learned how to reload. That was probably the biggest thing I got out of that. And then I think I made the mistake of buying Uncle Mike's holster. So I realized that's probably not the way to go. Excuse me. And this was a time when I was really, really dumb about it all. Like not knowing the difference between a tactard, I guess, and a wannabe, because they're really close. They're really similar, but yeah, I was total wannabe. Until I realized, man, I can't shoot. Because like it wasn't until 2014 I went to my real match. My first actual match was 2014. So 4 years later, I was I finally retired. I was in Illinois. A good buddy of mine, Mark Kastorf, took me to the match. And so I realized watching all these guys that are non-police, non-military dudes, and they're just kicking. I'm telling you what, if you're C-class, you're better than the average Army dude. Getting a rifle if you're C-class. I'm not kidding. If you're B-class, you're better than most average Army dude shooting. Yeah. So I learned quite a bit watching the dudes that do USPSA on, oh, this is how you should do it. Because, you know, there's this thing about understanding your craft, right? And I guess it's kind of like the same thing for police officers, because like if you take a look at your normal police officer, maybe two of them compete, right? The rest of the time they're out fishing or something,
right.
Or whatever they do on their free time. But like I could tell you, when I was living in Illinois, a good buddy of mine, he's the only one that shot competitively out of his entire police force. Of course, he's kind of a He's also a GM too. But yeah, it would be funny. It's like, how come no one else from your department shoots or, you know, comes out to matches with us? And that's just not their thing. It's like, okay. And sometimes you got to come back and look at that though, right? Well, why is that? Well, I think at some point, and if that's your profession, right, you don't want to show how bad you are to the public, right?
Right. Yeah.
That would be so slick. So, yeah, anyway, I'd say, hey, if it gets you better at your job, then why wouldn't you do it, right? But I don't know. It's different strokes for different folks. I mean, same questions asked about USPSA in general, right? Like, why is there only 40,000 members? And I think the number is going down, but if you take in the grand scheme of how many gun owners are out there, why aren't there more people? Like, I'd like to know what the numbers are for, like, Glock, the guys that do the Glock competitions or whatever NSSF has, or even IDPA. I don't even think IDPA is close to 40,000, are they? Like, I've never looked it up, so I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't looked it up either. I am a member of IDPA, but I haven't looked up to see, you know, what their numbers are. I don't know that they would be the same as USPSA, but I agree. I mean, even at 40,000, I mean, that's when there's 100 million, they're claiming 100 million gun owners,
right?
Then it's literally not even a percent, you know, it's nothing.
Correct. Yeah. 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 It's odd. It's odd. And even of that 40,000, right, only a fraction of that are hardcore competitors that dry fire religiously.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And out of the 40,000, what, 2,500 people vote?
That it just blows my mind too. It's like, how's that? How's that even a thing?
But that mimics the general population, you know?
That's true. Well, you're right. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, when there's, it would be more of the general population that votes, but, you know, it's only half
the ratio.
Yeah. So it's crazy.
Yeah.
So 2014, so you learned about it in 2010. 2014 is your first match. Where was that at?
Chillicothe, Illinois. That's correct. Yep.
Okay, so wait a minute. When did you retire?
In 2013.
Okay.
So you retired in California, and then we moved to Illinois, and I did it for a job. Yeah.
So okay. So you were in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And shot your first match. Okay. And did you get the bug the first time you shot it?
Oh, no doubt. Almost didn't, though. I almost DQ'd that match.
Okay.
I probably should have DQ'd. So not because of 180 or safety infraction per se, but I took my belt off with the gun on it and I put it on the table or on the ground or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I didn't know any better. And until my buddy, the guy who gave me a ride, looked at me and he gave me that look. I'm like, oh. So I put it back on. And
real all the quick. Other guys,
yeah. The other guys are like, because I had a job. Like, I don't know. Something was wrong with my belt or whatever. So I just did something stupid because I was ignorant. I didn't know. I was new. So, you know, it's the funny thing is because the guys stayed quiet about it, I was able to shoot it and go home and tell stories to the wife and say, hey, this is fun. I like this.
Okay.
And how is history person?
Was she receptive to that?
I would say so. Okay, so way before I was shooting, right? Like when I was in the Army, I was hardcore, and you probably heard this from a lot of the people you interviewed, but I was a hardcore paintball dude, right? Paintballer guy, because it was a force thing. It was a dynamic of adrenaline and pulling a trigger really fast and throwing a lot of paintballs out of a barrel to try to hit your opponent and stuff like that. But I was an adrenaline junkie, and I was the what you'd call the snake guy, the guy who wanted to get them, you know, down the deep in the enemy lines per se and try to get at least one guy before I get up. Anyway, that takes a toll on your body, that whole paintball thing. And I wasn't ready to do that anymore. So I had to find the next best hobby. So she was kind of accustomed to being around, you know, me doing events where it involves shooting at things, and so it was okay. It was a fairly easy transition. but it was also more costly and more difficult. Well, it's about the same cost. It was more difficult because now it's just you know, it's not a team sport anymore. It's just you shooting. So
Right.
you gotta rely on your own skill set, and there's less luck is involved. Well, yeah, there's way a lot less luck is involved than with
Now,
paintball.
do you think the sport of paintball prepared you for the speed of USPSA or practical shooting?
Yes and no. I mean, there's just different tactics that are involved with it. I mean, because like for one, you're not getting shot back at, right? So
Right.
like the use of cover is like IDPA, sure you have to use cover, but the use of cover and USPSA is just this is not there. I mean, it's more of a inconvenience really than something that you used for tactics. I mean, you could go all tactical on USPSA if you wanted to, but that's just slow, right? But yeah, I think where paintball comes into play is being able to what do you call it when you hip shoot, I guess is what it would be, because you're doing a lot of hip shooting in paintball. So if you know your barrel is and how the ball's trajectory is coming out of your barrel to hit your opponent, then it's kind of like blind fire, really. I mean, so what I'm saying is that especially with that new device now, the virtual thing we were talking about, the Ace.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so realistic where at some point in time, folks are get, I'm some of the scores I've seen are like just insane. It's like the dude's gotta be doing that like blindfolded, and he's just ripping the trigger, and he's indexing it by memory, because like I don't know how they get those hit factors. It's just ungodly. Like I'm trying to hit it, and I'm going as fast as I freaking can. There's still a six hit factor higher than I am, and it's just insane. It's like, okay, there's got to be a secret to this. And yeah, those guys are good. And I'm thinking that the reason why they're good is they're literally point shooting. So yeah, I would say in terms of relationships between paintball and shooting, and actually in this case now virtual shooting, is that you get accustomed to where that gun's pointed at, and you already know where it's going to go as soon as you pull the trigger, without even having to worry about the sight so much, right? Because that's the next next evolution of shooting, is that if you're so in tune to your gun, kind of like there's a great video of Casey Eusebio shooting one of the Steel Challenge stages blindfolded, super freaking fast. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen
So he's
that.
blindfolded, he draws and he shoots it. It's based on memory, right? Based on
Wow.
muscle memory, right? And it's just mind-boggling. It's like, wow. So and sure, it's still a challenge, but that's still a skill. That's pretty dang fast. And so
Yeah.
if you can do that with everything and you're just doing by point, right? Well, what do you need sights for?
Now imagine these guys who are so good with video in Hollywood, they take that snippet of him and then they chop John Wick into it, blindfold John Wick, and in place of the steel targets, you have people. And now you have Casey Eusebio looking like John Wick. Da, 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 da. I mean, it's like right out of Hollywood.
Definitely. No, it was a baller video.
Yeah, but where I was, but with the reason I was asking about the paintball thing is I feel like the running and gunning and the speed with which paintballers activate that trigger are two things that I came from a slower bullseye precision shooting background, and that's where I've had the issues, is where I've been wanting to put shot on top of shot versus. Instead of this is my aiming point, this is, you know what I mean? Like I have an aiming area, but I came from the background of no, your aiming area is the very center of the target. So I feel like had maybe I done paintball before, where you are moving, you are shooting, you're having to see stuff rapidly, you know, move quickly, react. I feel like that would have better prepared me for practical shooting than the bullseye shooting I had done my entire life.
I think there's a trade-off. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I understand where you're coming from with that. But one thing I would say is that with a paintball gun, you actually get both two fingers to pull the trigger. So they're
right.
Triggers are extended.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think now the rule set, you have what's called a ramp mode. And so you pull the triggers at a certain speed and it hits that ramp mode. And then the balls will only come out that fast based on whatever tournament you're shooting at. Like,
so they put a governor on the trigger.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's not America. That is not America.
True.
Oh my goodness.
Gotta be find some way to make it fair.
Next thing you know, they're gonna have guys competing against girls. That was a very politically incorrect statement, but incorrect statement.
Well, but that's anyway. Funny you say that. I can't remember if there were any all girl teams out there back when I was I had a mix. I had girls that played on my team, but anyway.
All right. So 2014 is your first match. You get hooked, you get into the sport. What were you in production or limited when you started?
So I was coming out of California, right? You gotta think, all right, if I ever go back, I won't be able to take my high cap guns with me. So high cap was outside. Right. I wasn't even considering it. So actually my first gun was an L10. My first division was L10.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're in Illinois. It's like Eastern California.
Now it is. Back then.
Now it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely Eastern California. Now it's horrible. It's like, I can't believe how they let that state go, but whatever.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So well, supposedly the sheriff's won't arrest you. You have your high cap magazine. They'll let you go. Supposedly.
Okay.
Because you're not in, not near Chicago. Because it was Chicago that made that happen, you know. I mean,
Chicago. Runs that state. Well, yeah. I mean, it's like any state. I am in Virginia. And if you look at the Commonwealth, there are way more red counties than blue, a lot more. Oh, yeah. But the problem is, mm-hmm. most of those red counties don't have a high population.
Right.
So Richmond, Newport News, Williamsburg, Virginia Beach, Fairfax. They're all blue and they have the majority of the population. So those knuckleheads run the Commonwealth.
Right, right.
And yes, I said knuckleheads and I will not retract it. I do not care.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.